One of the most common arguments I hear against Christianity and against religion more broadly is this idea that we don't need a creator. If you say, hey, creation needs a creator, the response is also, well, who made God or who created God? In fact, this is such a common problem, it has its own Wikipedia entry called The Problem of the Creator of God. You'll find versions of this from some of the better known atheists, but I encountered it recently on Twitter or X Twitter. And I liked the way the problem was presented because it was clear. The person, the atheist, responded, if you say everything must have a creator, their response is, well, if everything must have a creator, then your God needs a creator, and his creator needs a creator, and so on, ad infinitum. But if you say everything except God needs a creator, then allegedly, you're making special exceptions just to keep your false beliefs intact. Your fallacy is called special pleading. Look it up. Well, I've actually studied logic, and that's not what special pleading is. Now, I can show at a glance why this objection doesn't work, or we can take kind of a deeper dive. Let's start with kind of the at a glance. So imagine you're driving. You approach a railroad crossing. You don't see the start of the train. You just see one passenger car after another flying by. Now, even though you don't see the front of the train, you can know to a great degree of certainty that the train has a front with an engine. After all, you know two things. Number one, the passenger cars or box cars or whatever they are, they can pull the cars behind them, but they can't pull themselves. Instead, they've got to be pulled by someone or something else. Well, number two, you know that there can't just be an infinite number of passenger cars. Even if hypothetically, there were an infinite number, which avoid the logical impossibility of that. Even if you had an infinite number, whether you have one, a million, or an infinite number of passenger cars, if they're moving, someone or something is moving them. So then you just need an infinitely powerful engine. You haven't gotten rid of the problem of the engine at all. So however you solve it, at the end of it, have to have an engine. Because a passenger car, if you want to put it this way, it's like a moved mover, meaning this. That's kind of technical language. All it means is this. It's a mover. It's pulling the car behind it. And it's doing a great job of that. But it doesn't pull itself. The explanation for its movement, we might say, is external. It's the car in front of it. If you want to say, why is this car moving? The most direct answer to that is the car in front of it is pulling it. But then you might say, well, why is that car moving? And eventually, you have to get up to an unmoved mover. Now, an unmoved mover in this case just means the explanation for why it's moving isn't external, like a car in front of it, it's internal, the engine to the engine car. That engine, that internal explanation, explains not only why it's moving, but ultimately explains why every other car in the series is moving. So imagine you went through all of that and then your smart alecky passenger in the car says, aha, that's special pleading. Who's pulling the engine? Now, hopefully you realize they just don't understand the difference between a passenger car and an engine. They don't get the difference between a moved mover and an unmoved mover. So that's one of the easiest explanations, I think, for explaining why we don't believe God has a creator. Because the whole point is unmoved mover. The whole point is to explain why anything exists, there has to be at least one thing, person, place, thing, being, one thing that doesn't have to be created, doesn't have to have some prior existing thing to explain its own existence. Because otherwise, you're left with an infinite number of passenger cars and nobody to pull them. And in that case, the passenger cars don't go anywhere. So that's one way to talk about it in terms of movement. Another way to talk about it using slightly different technical language is contingency. Now, what do I mean by contingency? There's three things we have to get clear here. And I think each of these three things is so self-evidently clear that you'll hear it and say, well, of course, that's undeniably true. The first thing, everything and everyone that we encounter in the entire universe is contingent. Everyone you've ever seen, everything you've ever heard, tasted, touched, smelled, etc., is contingent. Contingent just means it exists and didn't have to exist, or it exists and didn't always exist. St. Thomas Aquinas, puts it like this. He says, we find in nature things that are possible to be and not to be. Like, they could exist, they could not exist. How do we know if something is contingent? A real clear giveaway is if it didn't used to exist. Because then it both wasn't and now is. I didn't exist prior to 1984. You go back to 1983, I'm not there. Therefore, you know for sure I'm contingent, meaning I only exist under certain conditions. And so that means a lot of things have to come together for me to exist. So things that either are born or die, that's a giveaway of contingency. Now notice, contingency is not just like me coming into existence, it's also me staying in existence. I'm contingent upon my parents, but also on food, air, water, and so on. The list is enormous. The temperature being just right on Earth. All of these things, the rotation of the Earth, fill in the blank, you could come up with any number of these things. All of these things are contingencies. And if they're not all just right, I don't exist, or you don't exist here on Earth. Well, if you think about, okay, well, where did those things come from? Now you're in something like the passenger cars. Where did my parents come from? Well, it turned out a lot of things had to exist for them to be here. What about air? A lot of things have to go right for it to be here. And so on. You get the idea, right? But you, second, can't just have an infinite number of those and that be the end of the story. Because here's why. Contingent things need someone or something else to account for their existence. Just like the passenger car, you had to look outside of the car to the car in front of it to explain why the car is moving. With the contingent thing, you have to look outside of the thing to the conditions, the air, the water, the parents, etc., to explain why it exists. That's what it is to be contingent, and you and I are contingent. But here's the kicker. Not everything can be a contingent thing. Now you might say, like, well, how do we know it's not only contingent things? Just like, how do we know it's not only passenger cars? Think about a Midwestern four-way stop. I say Midwestern because we're proud of our manners in driving. And this often means people will approach a four-way stop, and if you get there at roughly the same time, both people want the other person to go first. Now imagine a four-way stop where all four cars get there at exactly the same time, and every driver says, I'm not going to go first until somebody else goes. They're all contingent, right? Their driving is contingent upon one of the other drivers going first. Now, if all four of them decide that, bad news. Nobody's going anywhere, right? Because A is dependent on B, and B is dependent on C, and C is dependent on D, and D is dependent on A. And since none of them are willing to just go, you're stuck there. Now, I may be working out my own traffic trauma, but that's the basic idea. That if all of the players involved are contingent upon all the other ones, nothing ever happens. If I'm only going to the party if Steve goes there, and Steve's only going to go if I'm there, we're never going to go to the party. Unless we, you know, show up together. But the idea there is, if I'm only going to go if he's already there. That sort of thing. That's what contingency looks like. So what you need is someone or something that isn't contingent. So what do we know? Well, if it has a beginning or an end, it's contingent. So a necessary thing. Necessary just means not contingent. Why is it necessary? Because it can't have a beginning. It can't have an end, because that's a sign of contingency. If it's born, if it dies, if there's ever a time it didn't exist, if there's ever any conditions under which it didn't exist, we know there must be something else. St. Thomas Aquinas puts it like this. If at one time nothing was in existence, like if at one time there was just nothing, you're never going to get the conditions to get anything. So if at one time nothing was in existence, it would have been impossible for anything to have begun to exist. If you say everything in the universe exists under certain conditions, and at one point there was nothing, you have no conditions. And so nothing can come into being. You can't say originally there was nothing, and then when the conditions were just right, the universe popped into being. No, if you've got nothing, you have no conditions, and therefore the universe doesn't pop into being. That's as simple as it is. So if at one time there was nothing, then it would be impossible for anything to ever exist. And even now, we would have nothing, which is absurd because we realize this is not nothing. Existence exists. Therefore, we don't just have conditional things. We don't have things that just are merely possible, but there must be something which has necessary existence. There must be something that always has existed, always will exist. So that gets us to a necessary being. Now, I want to be clear about the limitations of the argument. At this point, we don't know everything about the unmoved mover. We don't know everything about the God who created all of existence. We know a few things, though. We know, for one, that the God of the universe isn't in the universe because everything in the universe is contingent. We know a second thing: the God of the universe must be eternal, cannot have a beginning, cannot have an end. That's logically required by this. We know a third thing: the God of the universe is an unmoved mover. No one created God. So that still leaves us a lot of work in figuring out, is the God of Christianity the God described by logic? Is the God that we encounter in the Bible the one and the same God that we've reasoned our way to knowing the existence of? But we at least know this. The question, who created God, is an absurd argument. It does not understand. It's like saying, what car pulls the engine car? Or saying, under what conditions will an unconditional thing happen? It just misunderstands the whole terms of the debate. So if you're an atheist, I would invite you, A, not to use that argument. B, get better arguments. Or better yet, C, have a humble intellectual curiosity about finding out if maybe you're wrong about atheism, and maybe if God does logically exist and has in fact revealed himself. For Shameless Popery, I'm Joe Heschmeyer. God bless you.